Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Josh Beausoleil from Boston is joining us on the podcast today. Josh has a really, really great story. He bought a fourplex building that he lives in. He rents out the other three units, and he's making $1,200 a month in cash flow. I mean, I think this is really awesome, and to be honest, I don't understand why everybody isn't doing this. This just seems like kind of a no-brainer. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to hear Josh's story.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Josh, take me back. What got you first interested in buying a rental?
Thank you, Dan. My family has been involved in rental properties on the buying and the management and the upkeep. And so I grew up with that and really developed a taste for it and have been moving towards that as my primary profession. I really enjoy it.
I love it. Now, you have a fourplex right now. And so you're living in one of the units and you're renting out the other three. What made you want to buy a fourplex over buying a single family or a duplex?
The fourplex, that's all correct. The fourplex has great cash flow through turnover. If 80% occupancy is a great number, the fourplex allows you to withstand some tenants moving out, some non-paying rents, and still maintain a really high level of occupancy.
Yeah.
In a four-family, I could cycle out the tenants confidently while having at least one other tenant pay the bill. Mm-hmm. So,
Did the property need a lot of work when you bought it?
The work that did need to get done was very advantageous in the negotiating process.
Okay. So you were able to say to the owner that, look, you're going to need a new roof or you're going to need this work done, so I'm going to offer you a lower price?
That's right. Originally, I offered about $5,000 more than the asking price, so about $375 total to lock down the deal, something I learned from my father. Once he bit, I went through with the inspector and looking over his shoulder and interviewed the tenants, looked for anything I could and made a very comprehensive list of issues that should be corrected, along with internet estimates, and provided it to the seller. He, of course, balked on most of them, but enough stuck that we really brought down the price.
Okay. Now, with when you were fixing the property up, when a tenant would move out, would you try to fix that unit up and raise the rent?
Exactly. So rents for the three apartments when I first moved in were just enough to cover the PITI payment.
And that's your mortgage payment, your principal, interest, taxes, insurance.
That's correct. Right. And that also includes private mortgage insurance because I used an FHA loan of 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to have my bases covered as a rule. But each time a tenant moved out, I raised the rent generally by about 10 to 20%. And today we've got a total rent increase overall in the building of about 30% from when I started.
Wow. 30%. That's incredible. Now, what is your payment for the building?
Sure. The entire payment, principal, interest, taxes, insurance was $2,600 when I first bought the property. Rates actually kept dropping. And I refinanced, so now my property payment, my PITI payment, is just $2,400.
$2,400, okay. And then what are the total rents for the building?
Originally, they were $2,500 or $2,600. And now, with the three apartments rented, is $3,625.
Incredible.
And that's not including, that doesn't include the rent that I would pay if I were a tenant, too. So once I move out, we'll have that much more margin.
Right. So, now you're making $1,200 a month plus you're living for free.
That's right. That's right.
Absolutely. Yep. Incredible. And then, so when you move out, how much could you rent your unit out that you're living in?
I'm optimistic but conservative, and I'm aiming for about $1,500.
$1,500, awesome.
Yeah. In Lowell, you see it as high as, you know, $1,700 for a sort of mid-range apartment. The luxury ones go up to $2,200. I don't expect to get that money. I get market rate because I work through government programs to get guaranteed rent.
So now you're, when you move out, you're going to be making $2,700 a month, hopefully, on that
yes.
building. Now, in major cities, in Boston, New York, Los Angeles, D.C., they say it's impossible to cash flow in these major
yeah.
cities, but you're proving them wrong. You're doing it. Are these deals out there, or did you just get really lucky?
No, I they absolutely are out there. I absolutely did get lucky, but it's sort of that old homage of like luck is sort of a product of persistence. You know, it was a long time looking for this property, and I bit hard when I found it. But in Boston Central, I mean, cash flowing is it's all but impossible. I'm sure someone does. I know some people who own property there, but it's razor thin margins. However, Boston is powering, you know, the rest of sort of a beltway around it, where Worcester, Lowell, Haverhill, Lawrence, I don't know the South Shore so well, but those places that rely on work for Boston are experiencing really great growth in both rents and property values.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely the numbers on this building are absolutely incredible. I mean, that is like just mind boggling that you're able to get so much cash flow off this building. Now, one thing that you mentioned is that you're getting above market rates. Tell us how you're doing that.
Oh, sorry, I may have misspoke, but I am getting market rates.
Market rates. OK, so
yeah.
So but you're using your tenants are on government assistance.
That's correct.
Section 8.
So the Section 8 and Homebase, which is like a move them out of the shelter program, they keep track of rents in Lowell, which again are inflated by the student population and then this program. And they say, hey, we'll give you market rent, which is great, especially if your location is a little outside where these high rents would be. And the government pays a portion or all of that rent, which is wonderful, which means that, you know, if I'm getting, you know, in an older building where there's some work to be done, you know, it's a little less pretty. You know, I know what I have. It's a diamond in the rough with needs a little polishing. You know, mm-hmm. always needs a little polishing.
Right.
But how that works out is that the government effectively pays, you know, let's say 2/3 guaranteed income. So I get slightly below market rates, which have now risen to the level of my original rental rates. And then the tenant pays the additional to get it up to a nice healthy market rate. That's fantastic because that means that the original rents I was getting when I first purchased the property are now the same in total amount as the guaranteed income I get today.
Yeah. Section 8 is really incredible. I mean, the money just gets direct deposited every month, just magically shows up in your account. And then
yeah.
you've just got to get a portion from the tenant, which is usually
yeah.
not a big deal. And you haven't had any trouble collecting the tenant's portion?
Well, not trouble. Flexibility is required. You know,
okay.
these are low income families. You know, sometimes a new family event or a change in job can make it difficult for them. So
sure.
I keep on them very quickly. If I don't get rent within a few days, of the first, I'll send a text out. Hey, you know, looking for rent. Hope everything's okay. Let me know if you need to, you know, discuss anything in terms of situation. I want to be a resource for my tenant.
Right. Do you charge a late fee if they're late, or do you work with them on that?
I do charge late fees. Massachusetts
okay.
is very interesting in that on the first of the month, rent is due, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, if they do not pay rent on that day, you can start eviction immediately. But you cannot charge a late fee until 30 days. The rent is 30 days late.
Okay.
Now, that kind of stinks, but there's no rule on how much you can charge. So it's sort of this double-sided sword. I have in my contracts, which I just executed with a tenant who stopped paying their rent, again, after many tries of, hey, you know, can we work out something out, blah, blah, blah. I charge 25% of my rent as late fee. Because, you know, due the second month.
Wow. Wow, that's really steep. Wow.
It's steep. I look at them each in the eyes as they come in and I say, talk to me. Don't be late with rent. But if you are going to be late with rent, talk to me. Like
right.
That's the only thing, nothing quite gets me like someone who promises without warrant, hey, I'm going to get you the rent in a week. Like, okay. Like week comes and they say nothing and I have to reach out to them over and over again. What I find is that if it's that second month and I don't have a lot of experience, but my last tenant, the only one I've had to evict, formally, by the time they're paying late fees, the relationship is over. I move for eviction nowadays.
Sure. Yeah. Now, what's it like living with the tenants? Do you feel like you can never get a break, that they're just coming over whenever there's a minor repair issue where they want to talk to you about something? Like they know when you're home. So is that an issue?
Yeah, I would say that it's not for the faint of heart because, first of all, if there's garbage in the yard, which a lot of times you get with lower income tenants, you know, who buy apparently a lot of plasma TVs. I'm always cleaning up plasma TV boxes in the yard. I don't know. The last tenant left an iPad in their apartment. I'm like, you can afford this to leave it behind? Anyway, so when you have to walk by your workplace, especially working, I work a 9-to-5 corporate job too. So when I come home from work, you have to kind of, you see the work that could be done. You have to be able to separate that. But even on a more intimate level, when you're just sitting in your house and you hear doors slam a little harder than they should, and you hear, you know, maybe children running around and something that sounds like something breaking, you think, oh, is that something I'm going to have to deal with? And it can be a little stressful,
yeah.
You know? I consider it part of the growing pain of, you know, I don't always plan on living in an apartment building that I'm renting out, but this is me putting in my dues, I think. You have to be ready for that.
Sure. What about drama between tenants? Do you ever get caught up in that?
Yeah, absolutely. At one point when I first bought the building, I had one tenant whose homeless son would occasionally come by. They were all addicted to very bad drugs that, you know, I found evidence of all over the house, burnt spoons and such. This homeless person would show up, he'd live there for a few days, and then he'd go upstairs to my other tenant, who was a woman, single woman with three children, like under like 12. And, you know, they were dating on and off again. And when they weren't dating, he'd broken their door twice. So to say I got caught up in the drama, I remember very specifically one night. You know, it's like the third time the cops have been there in a week, and he broke through the door and their door won't close. And there's like a little girl sleeping in the living room. And I was like, okay, I had a friend over and I said, dude, I know we're here to hang out, but I'm about to take my door off my hinge and then go put it on their door. So I literally ripped out my own door, put it on their door. So they had somewhere. And I spent the rest of the night cutting a new door that didn't quite fit. So that I could lock my house. You know what I mean?
Wow. You know, maybe it's a good thing you are living there. You know, like it's good having some kind of management there to watch and to see what's going on.
Exactly. At some point I would love to be that investor who has a semi-sophisticated security system, in terms of just video management. But in absence of that, like I feel better with an on-site presence, even with the occasional distress, you know?
Yeah. Now, tell me about the process for getting approved for Section 8. What's that like?
For Section 8, it's very similar to a regular tenant in that you can advertise it. People will show up and say, do you accept Section 8? Once they announce that they've got Section 8, they'll usually introduce you to their agent. And from there, they'll need a copy of the lease. They'll need a copy of your lead certificate. In some cases, depending on the agent, I think they need a certificate of inspection, which is like a business permit for residentials here in Massachusetts. They will schedule an on-site inspection where an inspector will come onto the property and announce, you know, formally what needs to change in order for you to receive this government income. And then you have to agree to yearly inspections and to maintain the property in a certain legally required manner, really.
What are the yearly inspections like? Is it the kind of thing where they're always going to find something no matter what kind of condition the property's in?
You know, I found that they're fairly lenient, but they almost always find something because they're really, you know, like screens on the windows. You know, over the winter, we always end up losing a couple of screens because we have replacement windows. And screens need to be in. You know, there's always something little. In one of the bathrooms, they don't use their fan enough and they get mold on the ceiling sometimes. And it's like, you gotta spray paint over it with the mold paint. But generally, and the more I work with them, the more beneficial our relationship becomes. They provide a lot of insight. A lot of times they'll give me heads up on things that are okay, but probably need to be watched for future violations. And at the end of the day, when you get that all tucked away, you know, you've got a good property, you know, you have a certain amount of legal protection in that, you know, someone signed off that this is, that you're doing your job and you're providing a safe home for a family.
Right. Is it a lot of, do you look at it as it's a lot of work or it's a big time suck dealing with Section 8?
No, I really haven't found that at all.
Okay.
It's an initial investment of time and energy and sometimes labor and cost. Once they're in, though, people seem to want to stay. They don't want to go through the process again. And I'm not even sure that they have an outlet to do so, to move apartment to apartment. The checks come every month. Like you said, direct deposit, no worries there. And I haven't really noticed much of a difference between that tenant and a regular tenant.
Yeah, it's a really, I think, a great way to make sure you're always getting paid for someone that's maybe a little bit risk averse, that is afraid that your tenants aren't going to pay. I think this is a great way to know you're always going to have the money every month. And if you make the place nice, the tenants probably aren't going to want to leave. And it sounds like your places are nice.
They're, right. I mean, I appreciate hearing that. I'll never say no, they're not nice. Cause they're, you know, I try to make it so that I could live in there and, you know, I'm a young man and like, still in the last phase of my bachelorhood here. So I've got, you know, pretty lax standards, but we want a clean place, structurally sound, dry. And absolutely, there are some stipulations where if the tenant breaks or destroys the property, that they'll lose their stipend. So they actually they get inspected. I just found this out. They actually get inspected much more often. So they have to, maybe I think every quarter someone comes by and just says, okay, you know, how many people are living here? Are you keeping garbage out? All the stuff that's not my responsibility. Or actually would be in a lot of respects. If you want to inspect your property, you see they're leaving food out everywhere. Someone else gets to do that for me. Right. So in some ways, I guess I'm saving some time. You know?
When the inspector's in there, are they, if they see something like maybe there's a broken window, are they going to ding you for that? Or are they not even looking for, so anything that they think is a violation, they're going to ding you on, but they're not necessarily looking for it.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Anything that would constitute a health code violation, safety violation. My building was built as a multi-unit, as far as I can tell. And so, you know, they're not finding code violations in terms of like structure. It's like you said, like a broken window. Mm-hmm. There's the tricky part, I guess, is for low-income tenants. I haven't been very good about enforcing those costs on the tenants. Mm-hmm. But I'm working towards that because there's always a couple little things. You spend a couple $100, you know?
Sure. So where do you see yourself going from here? Do you want to buy more deals like this? I mean, this seems like it's really lucrative. Would you want to have multiple fourplexes?
Oh, that's a great question. My original plan was to buy a fourplex every couple of years. What I found is that the time investment is a little higher than I thought, especially in the first couple of years. I've just kind of gotten to some breathing room, but also the deals are pretty scarce. There just aren't, because you're on that cusp of a residential and commercial property being four to five units. Mm-hmm. You can only hit four. There aren't so many four unit buildings. I get the feeling that people aren't really letting them go because they cash flow well in the area. So, my future vision has evolved. I want to get a 5+ unit, and I'm looking on the low end around like $400,000, something that I'd probably have to put down 20,000, you know, I'd hollow out some equity from this property one way or the other. And pick up like a 6 unit with some garages, is on my radar, or go higher, I have some interest from friends and family in terms of jumping on board an investment capacity. They've been watching me. I'm very excited that people are paying attention, and maybe go for something in like the $750,000 range, which I think is where you get into those commercial loan limits. Mm-hmm. So you might need 20-30% down, but around here, that'll get you something like 12 to 15 units, cash flowing $15,000 to $17,000 a month. And, you know, having put down 30 grand, you see like, you know, $5,000 to $6,000 in fixed costs, and, you know, you bump it up the same way. So I want to do this. Again, one of these, like, you know, like many of your contributors, it's like deal. Very fast pace. It's very, very attractive. Yeah. But I don't think the market here will allow for that. So I'm kind of biding my time, bringing this property up to snuff, giving it a lot of curb appeal, making it a cash flowing business, you know, well documented. And then I'd like to trade it up for the same thing, but in a bigger capacity.
I love it, man. Well, it sounds like you're on the right path, and it sounds like you're doing all the right things. So congratulations, and definitely keep us updated on how things are going.
Thank you very much, Dan. It was a pleasure to share my story.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.